Breaking news today on Seculo as President Biden celebrates his failures and his administration's failures in his speech to the UN General Assembly.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. We're going to take your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. If you caught any of President Biden's speech, this was his first speech as president to the UN General Assembly, you might be scratching your head. He talked about America ready to lead the world while the world is still aghast at how bad the withdrawal went in Afghanistan and how our NATO allies were left without any decision-making authority. We have kind of abandoned them and said, you know, go along with what we want to do or you're going to be stuck here. We think about the issues facing the country right now. Our own border crisis. I know we talked about that yesterday on the broadcast. We have got, there's multiple failures. And we talked about the idea that, you know, how many failures can you get through and still try to give this speech like it's reality? The problem with this speech was if it's not reality and it's celebrating disaster. We have right now the French ambassador left the United States because we went behind an ally's back to do a submarine deal with Australia that the French already had a contract for going back almost 5 years now. Now, again, there's ways to handle that. If you thought it was better for the U.S. to provide higher level nuclear subs, you could have worked out a deal with your ally France. Instead, completely snubbed and surprised, they pulled their ambassador. We've got, you know, of course, the Iran nuclear deal. Jake Sullivan and that team, they'd love to still rush into the Iranian nuclear deal if they can. You know who's making it difficult? It's not the Biden team. It's Iran making it difficult to get back into the nuclear deal. The Keystone Pipeline was canceled. No one got sanctioned for the Russia's Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. The Paris Climate Agreement, and these are things we've rejoined. But the idea that American leadership is back is just not in line with where the country is right now.
You know, with all the issues that people would criticize President Trump about with regard to foreign policies, how many ambassadors from NATO countries were pulled back?
Right.
Okay, none. So you've got the ambassador, France, Macron decided to pull back their ambassador because we didn't do the diplomatic approach. I'm not saying, by the way, it may have been a good deal, may have been the right thing for the United States, but the way in which you handle it, the way in which you deploy it is what's important here on the global scene. So you've got, as you said, you've got the situation with France. You've got a situation with the disaster in Afghanistan we talked about yesterday. And then the border is just getting worse by the moment. And by the way, for all of my friends on the left that complained about the harsh policies of President Trump, 3,000 people were deported yesterday from the Del Rio area of Texas. No hearings, deported, sent back. And by the way, their country of origin was Haiti, but a lot of them haven't lived in Haiti for 20 years. So, you know, you've got a disaster. You were complaining about the fence and border security, and now we've got, you know, 13,000 people, I guess 9,000 today, living under a bridge in Del Rio, Texas. So this, and he goes to the world stage and makes this pronouncement.
Take a listen. Biden 45.
I stand here today for the first time in 20 years with the United States not at war. We've turned the page. All the unmatched strength, energy, and commitment, will, and resources of our nation are now fully and squarely focused on what's ahead of us, not what was behind.
You know, again, this idea that the United States is not at war and we're turning the page, we have all the unmatched strength and energy. He doesn't talk about the fact that the war ended and it looked like we lost. It looked like all the gains that were made against terrorism, his top advisors are telling us the terrorists are coming back from Al-Qaeda. They're going to reconstitute. You got a new ISIS there. So here's the broadcast day. Joining us live on the broadcast first, Mike Pompeo, our senior counsel for global affairs. Then following Mike will be Rick Rennell, our senior advisor for foreign policy and national security. That's just in the first half hour of Seculo today.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Secular. If you go to aclj.org right now or later today, if you're in your car, you'll see a new piece up by former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, a senior counsel for global affairs of the ACLJ on Afghanistan. Far too many questions remain unanswered. Secretary Pompeo is joining us now. Secretary, let me just go right to this. President Biden, he gave his first address to the UN General Assembly today. We played a little bit of sound for that for our audience in the first 5 minutes of the broadcast. He sounded triumphant about his ending of the conflict in Afghanistan, saying, quote, we ended 20 years of conflict in Afghanistan, and as we close this period of relentless war, we're opening a new era of relentless diplomacy. Is this a good reflection, I mean, of the state of the Biden foreign policy, that suddenly we're going from we've ended this relentless war, and now it's relentless diplomacy?
Jordan, he forgets that the bad guys get to play their cards too. And that's what he forgot in Afghanistan. It's the piece that I wrote talked about these unanswered questions. We have some questions that are answered. There are still Americans left behind. There's still a massive amount of American equipment behind. We know that this chaotic departure that didn't have to be, we'd left them a plan for the orderly transition, the orderly withdrawal of Americans' folks with a firm set of conditions behind it. They ripped it up to create an arbitrary deadline on September 11th. And we know that the net result of this was 13 American lives lost and chaos inside of that country that almost certainly will result in greater risk that we're attacked from that place someday.
You know, Mike, one of the things that as I looked at it and looked at the speech, I think it was not realistic. It wasn't reality. It ignored, as we've said, the Afghan failure. It ignores the border crisis, which is still an ongoing disaster. I said this earlier, we've got France with all of the pushback we used to get and you used to get and others for President Trump's action on diplomacy and whatnot, which I think actually was great for America. But I remember defending this. And then France pulls back its diplomats from the United States because our diplomats did not evidently, whether the deal was right or not, they didn't handle it diplomatically. I'll say it that way. When you look at all of that, does this speech give more aid to our friends, or does it make them more cautious?
So I was chuckling only because your point's so right. I remember we were the rubes. We didn't know anything about diplomacy. We were the barbarians at the gate breaking these international institutions. And these are the guys who end up having the French pull their ambassador back. And a fellow named Ibrahim Raisi speaking at the UN, who's a a mass murderer now running Iran, and they're sitting in Vienna talking to him. I must say that the vision that we had, and I remember the president, I think it was his first speech at the UN, but it was a coherent theory of the case. It said these top-down international institutions are failing the world and American security, and that sovereign nations are is the right way to approach this. That's how we built out our foreign policy. Today, what we saw was a pretty incoherent understanding. And when President Biden said that he's one of the foremost foes of terrorism, I must say that the Houthis have been taken off the terror list in Yemen. He refuses to deal with the Taliban, who we know are terrorists. His words are so deeply inconsistent with the actions we've seen in the first 8 months of the administration. I hope they begin to actually live up to that commitment that he made to make sure that terror continues to be fought wherever we find it. We know that President Obama let ISIS run free. It looks like this is the second iteration of that same model.
In your new piece up that's up at ACLJ.org, and again, it's titled On Afghanistan, Far Too Many Questions Remain Unanswered. That is brand new from Secretary Pompeo up at ACLJ.org now. It seems as though you've got President Biden in this position. He's, when he's talking to the American people, when he's addressing the UN like he did today, like putting a bow on the Afghanistan withdrawal. Like, this is done. But it seems like there's in your piece, so many questions remain unanswered. I think, what was the, Will, I'm talking about producer Will, that Mayorkas sound about how many people actually had the special immigrant visa? 3%. Only 3% of 60,000 of the 60,000 Afghans that got out during the airlift, Secretary Pompeo, the DHS is saying only 3% of those were the SIVs.
There's going to be a lot of gnashing and gnawing of teeth when we figure out precisely who all has been permitted to come into our country. I'm convinced of that. I don't think there was a rational path forward for this. And so there were decisions made where people who were deserving of getting a chance to come to America, who we'd made promises to over the last 20 years, weren't able to get out. You see some of them still struggling to find their way back, and I'm sure some of them are going to vanish. And then we have people who came in that I'm convinced we will be trying to figure out a way to either find a crime that they committed because they are putting Americans at risk, or we're trying to figure out how to get them back out of the country. This was a chaotic departure from Afghanistan. And, you know, when you set an arbitrary deadline, President Trump wanted to get everybody out, make no mistake about it. But each time we would evaluate, were the conditions right? Have we met the challenges that America faces so we can actually do that? And as we drew down, we put enormous costs on the Taliban in a way that made sure we protected American forces and American property in the country so we could deliver an orderly transition. President Biden just chose to make a chaotic dash for the exit.
Well, that chaotic dash has been unbelievable, actually. And when you get statements like this, you point this out in your article that's posted at ACLJ.org, that in Germany, the Chancellor Merkel's most likely successor called the execution of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, quote, the greatest debacle that NATO has experienced since its foundation. Now, that is a huge statement, Secretary Pompeo. It's a huge statement because of the ramifications of what it means because the United States orchestrated that withdrawal.
Oh, yes, we drove it. President Biden picked the date. He picked the time. He picked the hour. He picked the cap on American forces. He forced the military into a constraint that required them to abandon Bagram Air Base, the one asset that could have really delivered high-volume exfiltration of our equipment and our American people from the country. Now, these were political decisions, not strategic decisions, not military decisions, but the commander-in-chief himself made that call, and our NATO allies suffered for it. They are not happy about it, and that set of relationships, that work. I remember, you have to chuckle, it was the Trump and Pompeo team that was going to destroy NATO. We built right. NATO. We committed. we built NATO. It was $400 billion more resource when we left than when we came. And we had developed those relationships. It was prickly at times, for sure. And now you can see our NATO allies and partners very worried that American credibility is non-existent.
I remember actually being in some meetings when we were dismantling NATO. That was the allegation, right? And you know, the administration's dismantling NATO, and your offices are. And it was really all about you and the president saying NATO partners have to actually financially participate in this defense. So meanwhile, nothing happens in a negative way with NATO. It's stronger than it's ever been. And then it's Joe Biden's administration that just bungles this withdrawal, which costs 13 lives of Marines and then seven kids in that whole disaster where they went after the, allegedly it was going to be a someone that was about to do a terrorist act and it was an aid worker. And I just think the duplicity in this of the media, though, Mike, is unreal here.
It is. It's just a real disservice to the American people who won't accurately reflect these two very different visions for America's national security and what they really mean on the ground, how they impact American lives each and every day. We know families that have their brothers and sisters and kids that are serving in our armed forces around the world. We built them. We resourced them. We made sure that we protected them everywhere. We didn't have an attack on an American soldier, sailor, airman, or marine since February of 2019. A remarkable capacity for peace through strength. These folks have come in and put those kids at risk, and the media wants to tell the story the precise opposite way, 180 degrees out, and it's an enormous disservice to our young men and women in uniform and to the American people to understand the risk. When you travel the world and apologize for the United States of America, you put us at risk.
Yeah, I'll be quite honest. It was much more enjoyable traveling the world under the Trump administration, the Obama administration, especially in countries that we do work in where there's always the kind of, maybe countries are not always allies with the U.S., but they was a healthy respect for what it meant to be an American when you were overseas and you weren't just part of the European espresso sipping class at the UN. Final question for today, Secretary Pompeo, is this: all of these issues, I feel like today, I kind of addressed this in one question, but for the final question, this idea of just trying to move on past Afghanistan, move on past these disasters, it's going to be up to the American people. It's going to be up to people like you speaking out our broadcast, but also Congress and your former colleagues in the House, the Senate. They've got to continue to press on this as well.
I believe the American people witnessed American weakness in Afghanistan. They could see that the Biden administration wasn't ready for prime time, wasn't ready to execute this really important mission set. And so I don't think, in spite of the fact that President Biden wants to turn the page and pretend that Afghanistan was a happy departure and a successful departure, I don't think the American people, I think they can see with their own eyes that that's not the case. I suspect that this will be in their minds for an awfully long time to come.
Secretary Pompeo, it's always great to have you as part of the team at the American Center for Law and Justice. The new piece by Secretary Pompeo is up at ACLJ.org. It's on Afghanistan. Far too many questions remain unanswered. That's brand new, just up this morning at ACLJ.org. We'll be right back on Seculo. I encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. We're going to be coming back with Rick Rennell, again, who spent a long period of his career before becoming an ambassador at the United Nations. So we'll talk to him today about the speech and the impact there.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
To Secular, a guy who knows a lot about the United Nations, part of our team at the ACLJ, Senior Advisor for Foreign Policy and National Security, former Acting Director of National Intelligence, Rick Rennell. Rick, just first, your reaction today. You spent a decade of your life at the United Nations. You've seen a lot of speeches from world leaders, including American leaders. Was this just a speech that was just, it was just like not reality? It's words that sound nice, but not realistic. There none of this matches the images we see on TV or the reporting even out of the administration itself.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Jordan. I spent 8 years of my life there. I've helped write a number of presidents' speeches. I've seen hundreds of world leader speeches, and this was the typical UN lingo, just regurgitating a bunch of the UN lingo. And I think the way you say it is exactly right. It doesn't match reality. I mean, look, we've got two permanent members of the Security Council, the United States and France, who currently have no ambassadors in each other's country. France has withdrawn their ambassador because of the way that they've been treated by the Biden team. That wasn't even mentioned. I mean, this is the UN Security Council is everything at the UN. Two members are fighting, and Biden didn't even mention it. I mean, this was just a bunch of lingo regurgitated, and I think everybody in that room loved it because they don't face reality either. They don't live in the real world. It's a bunch of diplomats.
You know, we've had experience with the UN also for almost 20 years. Our European Center for Law and Justice is a NGO with the United Nations. We've intervened on countless cases, mostly involving religious liberty and religious freedom around the globe and people being persecuted for their faith. But I found it ironic that Joe Biden, the president, today starts his, well, let's play that bite actually, where he talks about the 20 years, first president in 20 years not to be at war. Let's take a play.
I stand here today for the first time in 20 years, the United States not at war. We've turned the page. All the unmatched strength, energy, and commitment, will, and resources of our nation are now fully and squarely focused on what's ahead of us, not what was behind.
Interesting words, which you would not have written, I would not have written, because it's actually not accurate. So we may not be at a bullets war, where we've got, you know, ammunition going off and troops being deployed. But let's be realistic. We've got a major crisis with Iran. We've got a major crisis with China. Russia's certainly rattling their sabers. And the approach, it appears to me, Rick, is that this administration basically says, well, we actually don't have troops deployed, thus we're not in battle.
Well, that's not the truth either. I don't want to go into great details about our intelligence capabilities, but the reality is that we do. And he should know that. He was not properly briefed. And whoever signed off on that phrase, I think, has their head in the sand. You and I have talked about this before, Jay. We've got a national security advisor who's an academic. And when you write a white paper and you see the world on a one-dimensional piece of paper, that is fundamentally different than the information you get on the ground in the real world. And that's why now we're finding all of these intelligence, State Department, and DOD officials who are coming forward saying, I've been warning the Biden team for months that there would be a collapse in Afghanistan. And they just ignore this information and they go to the UN and they speak to a bunch of people who also ignore reality. You know, the diplomats there in New York, I know them very well, they don't represent their people. I mean, 69 of those countries that Joe Biden spoke to criminalize homosexuality. 9 of those countries will kill you for being gay. And there wasn't a lick of decriminalization talk from Joe Biden. We didn't talk about Kosovo, Serbia, and the Balkans issue. Joe Biden didn't mention a word of that. I could go through a litany of issues that Joe Biden didn't even mention, but instead he talked a lot about how much money we're going to give to other countries for infrastructure and climate issues. And this was a speech that was not America first. It was globalization first.
You know, we know that this is happening in a couple of different areas, right? And that we've got issues where the speeches are given. The speechwriters write the speeches. We all understand that. But the problem is, the difficulty, I would say, to the problem is, the reality is not that. You mentioned the human rights abuses. I could add to that in the West Bank and Gaza. Pastors and others thrown off the tops of buildings. We're still giving them aid.
The Chinese.
Genocide. Yep, genocide. So why would you not address the human rights issues?
Yeah, look, I don't understand it. It's global talk. It's what the UN wants. You don't address it because it makes people uncomfortable in that situation. We've talked about this before. Joe Biden maximizes consensus. He wants the world to like him. And when you go into that room, you got to talk in these, you know, big lofty phrases. You can't point out countries that are a problem. I will say this. I was very uncomfortable to see the section on Israel. Because when he said his couple of lines, he said, well, let's be clear, you know, we want a Jewish state. And then he said in front of that huge 193-member UN Assembly Hall, which is hostile towards Israel, he uttered the words, but, right after he said, we want a Jewish state, but. And then he went on to talk about how, you know, we've got to somehow have, you know, two-state solution where the Palestinian Authority gets this and that. And, you know, there's money coming into the Palestinian Authority. I just am very uncomfortable when United States president does anything but support Israel unequivocally, especially at the United Nations.
We can play that because you're right. The reference there is pretty troubling. Take a listen.
To manage tensions around the world. Must seek a future of greater peace and security for all people of the Middle East. The commitment of the United States to Israel's security is without question, and our support for an independent Jewish state is unequivocal. But I continue to believe that a two-state solution is the best way to ensure Israel's future as a Jewish democratic state, living in peace alongside a viable, sovereign, and democratic Palestinian state.
Again, it's that broad talk, Rick, that you were talking about that they like to hear at the UN. You know, what's surprising to me is he did get applause at the end, even though we know our NATO allies are not happy with us. Do you think, Rick, the world was applauding at the UN because they like this position of America? They like America in this spot where we look weak, we look like we need everybody's help, we're going to throw out all the money, make friends again by giving out money, even though diplomatically we've got mistake after mistake piling up, they'd still rather have that America than a strong one.
Yeah, and I think the only difference is they would say they're not necessarily cheering for a weak America, even though we know they are. They would just say, we want consensus. We want everybody to be equal. And what I've always said when I was at the UN is people are equal. Countries are not equal. And we need to not shy away from that. There's only one country at the United Nations that gets in trouble for pushing its own agenda, and that's the United States. When you have negotiations in the Security Council, there's 14 countries pushing what's best for them. The Germans push in a phrase or a statement from the UN, what is best for Germany? And everybody at the UN knows that that's the case. And the United States should be able to do that too, but we don't. We apologize on the world stage.
Rick, it's always great to have you on. Great to have you part of the ACLJ team, especially to have someone who spent the time at the UN as an ambassador before becoming the acting director of national intelligence to give us that insight into what this speech meant at the UN. We come back, we'll start taking your phone calls on this. 1-800-684-3110. Did you catch Biden's speech? How do you think America looks to the world? 1-800-684-3110.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Dude!
keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever, this is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, folks, so we had back-to-back. There was a lot of information there, I think, to kind of break down and analyze. Take your phone calls, 201-800-684-3110. After you heard that first half hour of the broadcast, you heard Secretary Pompeo, you heard Rick Grenell, both giving their – I mean, you had a former Secretary of State, so at the UN, of course, and working at the international level with all these countries that diplomatically was key. Then you had Rick. Rick spent, as he said, almost 10 years of his career – before becoming ambassador, before becoming the acting director of national intelligence, he was our lead spokesperson at the United Nations for our permanent U.S. mission at the UN in New York. And so he was there through the war on terror. He understands the tough times at the UN, the times when things aren't as tough, and the position for America to be in. So what we saw was a speech from President Biden that was so just out of touch with reality. He's like, he didn't talk about China. He didn't talk about Russia by name. He didn't talk about these specific issues of problems. And, you know, the Chinese leader just phoned it in via taped message.
Right.
So it is a different time at the UN, but also shows, I get with COVID, but still, you would think if this was a time when you were going to try to bring the world together, they're not coming to the table. And they're applauding. And I really do believe, as we talked about with Rick, they applaud at the end, not because they like the decisions he made, like with Afghanistan, right. But because America's weaker now.
Well, look, this is his. You know, this was supposed to be his big speech in front of the United Nations, which it was, and it was supposed to also be foreign policy issues. But let's go through the foreign policy issues. We had a botched, horrible withdrawal from Afghanistan. Terrible. I mean, disastrous. 13 Marines killed, 7 kids. This is on the exit. 2 aid workers. As soon as he took office, he stops building the security fence on our border, and what happens there? Well, we've got 12,000 people under a bridge in Del Rio, Texas. Now, 3,000 of them were deported yesterday. So now we're doing mass deportations. Could you imagine what would be going on in the media if that was President Trump doing those mass deportations? Just for a moment, just imagine that. Then we entered into a major renegotiation or a defense deal with the UK and Australia by snubbing France so that France withdraws its ambassador. This is not under Donald Trump. This is under Joe Biden. America is back. Leadership. Macron pulls his ambassador because we didn't diplomatically handle it appropriately. He wants to get back into the Iran nuclear deal. He canceled the Keystone Pipeline, so we're more responsible now and more reliant on overseas energy sources. Refuses to sanction the company that's in charge of building Russia's Nord 2 gas line. And he extended the New START treaty with Russia for 5 years, which allows Russia to continue to build more nuclear weapons. And, of course, rejoin the Paris Climate Accord. Those are the accomplishments in the first 9 months. Well, Professor Hutchinson, can you imagine the next 9 months?
I cannot. I think the Biden administration has engaged in a parade, a festival of celebrating failure. President Biden has suggested that the United States is on the move, that his program of building back better is working to improve the world. In essence, however, the Build Back Better program is nothing less than a celebration of weakness and surrender. He says we have now turned the page. We have turned the page by opening our borders to a migrant crisis. We have turned the page by stabbing France in the back. We have turned the page by killing 10 civilians rather than ISIS-K in Afghanistan. We have turned the page by surrendering to the terrorists that called the Taliban in Afghanistan. So it's an unmitigated disaster.
All right, folks, we come back. We continue the discussion. Also, I'd like to get your thoughts at 1-800-684-3110. Do you think the American people will understand how unrealistic this speech was, how it was not a speech based in the reality of the world, but that it was a speech based off talking points, hoping that you don't actually check the facts of what he's talking about? 1-800-684-3110. We want to hear from you and your thoughts. We'll be right back on Seculo.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Seculo. Again, if you want to talk to us on air, it's 1-800-684-3110. If you want to get your questions on social media, if you're watching the broadcast, whether it's on your phone, your tablet, your computer, anywhere of the multiple places the show is streaming, you get your questions in that way as well. Our team is monitoring that. Let me play Joe Biden again just at the UN, because he talks about joining the Human Rights Council. So we talked with Rick Grenell about the lack of human rights being really addressed specifically in the speech. There were not specifics in the speech, but we didn't talk about genocide going on. You know, the speaker after Joe Biden was President Xi of China. The U.S. president didn't call him out right before that, and so he was able to tape his speech. He didn't even do it live.
Right.
Didn't call him out for his government conducting what his State Department continues to acknowledge, like the Trump State Department, is a genocide. A genocide. Remember what happened to Omar Bashir. There were warrants out for his arrest and ultimately overthrown by his own people and tried by his own people in Sudan. That's how you deal with people that commit genocide. You put international arrest warrants out. You isolate them entirely. But now, if you're China and you've got economic backing, you can commit genocide against your own people, which is a UN definition.
Exactly.
Specifically defined by the UN post-World War II. Post the Holocaust, we're going to define these different things. What's a crime against humanity? What's genocide? There's different things. And the State Department said what's happening to the Uyghur Muslims in China is genocide. And yet a genocide of Muslims. You would think at the UN, you would mention that. There are a lot of majority Muslim countries. They right. have a lot of sway. And many of them are our allies. A lot of those countries are our allies. Not a word.
The ignoring of human rights and human rights abuses is really unprecedented. But I wanted to go to Wes Smith on this. And Wes, get your take on overall the kind of approach that Joe Biden took here.
It's a break from reality. And it's sad in a way. I mean, in a way, I deplore some of the policies, most of the decisions he's made. But in a way, I feel sorry for him. But we're a country in crisis, Jay. We have a faltering leader. We have extreme political divisions at home, even though he promised that he would unite us and be a president for all people. And we have a break from the harsh reality when it comes to the results of policies and decisions that he's making. So you have, you know, bad choices, bad policies combined with, when that happens, a poor execution of things once it's made. You know, so it's bad choices, bad implementation of trying to do some of the policies and choices, and then combined with that, a denial of any negative reactions to the policies and the decisions once they're made. Our enemies are emboldened. Yep. Our allies are confused and disappointed. And I think the rest of the world is hesitant and they're doubtful about America's role in the world. So on the one hand, Jay, I feel sorry for Joe Biden, truly.
Being, I feel sorry for the United States.
Well, I do too. But being president is hard on anyone who takes that job. But he was older and weaker when he began. He is now faltering. His staff is shielding him. What we have, Jay, is a leadership crisis. He is inept. And that is not a harsh political judgment. It's just reality. It's the reality of what's going on.
Well,
the polls reflect this.
Well, I put the polls aside. Let's talk about this reality, Than. I mean, the reality is France has withdrawn its ambassador to the from the United States. France, we're not talking about some hostile regime. We're talking about Macron. We're talking about France.
Yeah, an ally you've got to have, Jay. I mean, look, I would make a couple of points to piggyback on your conversation with Wes. First of all, it's just unequivocally true that the world is a better place when America is strong. And Jay, I can tell you firsthand, of course, you don't need to hear this. You've been there many times before. The United Nations, Jay, it's only a force for good in any sense of the word when the United States is filling the role of strength that it was designed to fill at its origins. Remember, people need to understand this. The United States is one of the permanent members of the United Nations Security Council. It is designed to have veto power. It is designed to lead with strength, not through consensus, as Rick talks so much about. And Jay, there was a section in this speech where I think it really articulated the biggest problem of the whole approach of this administration. It was the section where he talked about rejoining the Human Rights Council, even though China, Cuba, Pakistan, and Russia still sit on that Council of Human Rights. He talked about re-engaging with the World Health Organization, even though they haven't called out China's role for COVID. He talked about rejoining the Paris Climate Accord, even though the rest of the world isn't there. Jay, the United States has to make sure that these portions of the United Nations actually work for good rather than just doing whatever they want. You can't just acquiesce to them. And that's what that section of the speech suggested to me.
You know, I think that what I come away with this, Harry, too, as well, is that this it's angering because I'll play this for people. This is about as much as we got on human rights, and it was bungled up with, it was basically just we rejoined the Human Rights Council, which is not about
human
necessarily
rights.
Great about human rights.
Terrible.
The Trump administration left it because they spend most of their time attacking Israel. They don't attack the genocide in China. They don't talk about the treatment of women, girls, minorities in other countries. But take a listen, because this is basically the only time he mentioned it by 51.
We're back at the table in international forums, especially the United Nations, to focus attention and to spur global action on shared challenges. We are re-engaged at the World Health Organization and working in close partnership with COVAX to deliver life-saving vaccines around the world. We rejoined the Paris Climate Agreement, and we're running to retake a seat in the Human Rights Council next year at the UN. And as the United States seeks to rally the world to action, we will lead not just with the example of our power, but God willing, with the power of our example.
But you're afraid to call out the real human rights, Harry. I mean, you're afraid to call out the real abuses by China, Iran. I mean, the list could go on, but at least
I want Will to pull a list of who's on the Human Rights Council, but go ahead and respond, Harry. But I want to pull that list.
Jordan, you're absolutely correct. So one of the things about Joe Biden that is so appalling is his willingness to use language such as openness, inclusion, tolerance, commitment to human rights, and it's all backed without any principle. So he ignores religious liberty rights in China. He ignores the genocide effectively that's going on in Nigeria. He ignores what the Taliban is doing to women under Joe Biden's watch. And he even ignores the human rights of American citizens who were left behind deliberately, arguably, and intentionally by the Biden administration. So if President Biden wishes to demonstrate a commitment to human rights, then he needs to back that claim with action. So far, it's fecklessness on steroids.
I mean, look who's on this list. Romania, Russia, Saudi Arabia. I'm just going through some of them.
Cuba,
Sri Lanka, Sudan. I'm looking at Afghanistan. Yeah. Vietnam. And then there are some good countries. I mean, I say good countries, countries that do respect. But this is the list you're – this is who you're sitting down with. As if this is somebody – you're going to be – we are running, so hopefully we get elected to be part of this unbelievable group of human rights abusers.
Yeah, and this is part of what I mean when I say it's a break from reality. It's like he is clueless as to how the real world operates, how our enemies look at us, how our allies now look at us. And it's like it totally is lost on him. You know, I was thinking about our country as a whole, because not only are we struggling with some of his foreign policy, you know, decisions and rhetoric, we're also struggling at home, Jay. And we are resilient as an American people. We truly are. But, you know, after listening to this speech today, I am more convinced than ever we are also in big trouble. And there's a denial that we even are in trouble, which makes it even more frightening.
When we come back for the break, and again, we get your calls at 1-800-684-3110, because I want to save it for the final segment of the broadcast. There is this idea by President Biden in his speech that I want to play for people too, because it's this idea that we're going to stand up stronger for our allies. We're there for our allies. We're going to be there for all of our allies. But that's just not what the U.S. did. I mean, we abandoned our allies. The fact that, you know, we only talked about this for a second in the first half hour of the broadcast. The fact that out of the 60,000 Afghans that they evacuated, they made a big deal about how many people they airlifted out. Only 3% of those people were the people that were supposed to get out of Afghanistan. People that were supposed to be the priorities to get out of Afghanistan. So what does that mean? Hardly any of the people that assisted the U.S. over 20 years, risking their life, got out, and the Taliban can go through and continue to execute them and eliminate them from Afghanistan. We have no presence there. We've got no embassy. We have no he talked about strong diplomacy. We have no diplomatic mission in Afghanistan. We gave up our embassy. By that George Floyd mural outside the Afghan embassy, no longer. So whatever side you're on, whatever issues, right, left, or whatever you care about, you know what the Taliban did to that mural? Painted over it with the Taliban flag. So the symbol of defeating America. We didn't win that conflict. That's not how you win a conflict. You don't win a conflict, and the moment, while you're leaving, terror groups are respawning, and they're killing Americans, like the Marines who were killed, and Americans get left behind. So we come back. We'll take your phone calls. We'll take your thoughts at 1-800-684-3110. Be right back on Seculum.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Welcome back to Secular. I'll save this to play for you now, because remember, when you're addressing the UN as the American president, you are there to represent America. At the international level, too, you talk about issues that are international. It's not a forum for domestic policy so much as it is a forum for international issues that affect other countries. But yet our president, Joe Biden, couldn't pass up the opportunity to take a swipe at the country he's the president of, in front of the entire world. And he's taking a swipe. They think when they take this swipe, by the way, they're taking a swipe at half the country who didn't support them and didn't vote for them politically. It's a partisan swipe. Take a listen to this bite.
While no democracy is perfect, including the United States, we'll continue to struggle to live up to the highest ideals to heal our divisions. And we face down violence and insurrection. Democracy remains the best tool we have to unleash our full human potential.
He talks about insurrection, violent insurrection. I mean, these are countries that deal with real revolutions on a continuous basis, coups, people overthrown, lack of. I mean, think about Afghanistan, who was at the UN. Who are their representatives now? I guess the Taliban is going to come in and be the representatives at the UN, or the people that were left behind there. That's real civil war and real insurrection and revolution and change, not a protest that went bad one day.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out, and Harry, you tell me why would someone in a speech writing context put this in there as if this was an equal comparison to what's going on in all these other countries? Venezuela, I could go through the list, because it's not.
I think you're absolutely correct, and I think the explanation is quite simple. Ruth Weiss, a distinguished analyst, points out that if you look at Napoleon, he lost. Why? On the fields of Eton's, which are an upper-class school in Britain, where people learned what? Perseverance, strength, and principle. So the Afghanistan war was lost where? In the halls of Harvard, in the halls of Yale, in the halls of Princeton, where these elites who are advising Joe Biden learn to hate America. Yep. So I think at the end of the day, Biden's remarks at the UN reflect that hatred, which goes back 30, 40, yep, even 50 years. And so at the end of the day, there's this equivalence between what happened, let's say, on January the 6th, with what's going on, let's say, in Afghanistan right now, yep, or in Iran, where people are literally being terrorized on a daily basis.
Yep. So, it was interesting because our senior advisor, Rick Grinnell, said this, and I think it was appropriate, and that is that the senior advisors to the Biden administration, Colonel Smith, are professors. And yeah, and they're making this, and it's following up with Harry said. So this is becoming an academic exercise rather than reality. What happened on January 6th was horrible. It was not the Civil War.
No.
It was not the violent overthrow of government. It was really bad actors doing really bad things that are being really punished.
Yeah, and I can't really believe.
But our democracy was never at risk. Let's be clear. We're much stronger than that.
Not only our democracy was not only at risk, but the principles and ideals of who we are, who our country is, was not at risk either. Part of the crowd that is in academia and part of the crowd, frankly, in the Biden administration, they are the ones who deny the uniqueness of America. They deny American exceptionalism. And so in an effort to somehow be humble and transparent before the world, they actually betray the principles, yep, that make us who we are. Yep. And those principles are the principles on which the rest of the world largely hopes.
Yep.
And he's denying that hope. So, it's unbelievable.
It is. So, Than, you're one of our designated representatives to the UN. So when you see this, give everybody a sense of what is really taking place here.
Well, you're inside a hostile room, quite frankly. I mean, you're inside a hostile room to the United States. You're inside a hostile room to many of our allies, including Israel. I mean, one of the facts we throw out a lot of, Jay, and we don't just throw it out, we do it to sort of describe the tenor of the room. There are more censures passed in that room against Israel than all of the other nations of the world combined. So not those esteemed human rights supporters of China, Cuba, Pakistan, and Russia that make up the Human Rights Council. No, they're targeted against Israel. So when the United States president takes the stage to address that audience, Jay, in my view, he shouldn't be using that as an opportunity to engage domestic politics or domestic spats. By the way, I actually think that would be a great issue for him to truly lead on here domestically, because I think both sides have a lot of work to do when it comes to political discourse in the United States. But when you are on the world stage, Jay, you need the United States president to lead with strength, because quite frankly, that's what the rest of the world needs for him as well. So when you go up and you deliver a speech like this, where it's basically just pandering to the wishes of the world, in my view, Jay, it takes you down a very dangerous road. And if you look at history, just look back at the Obama administration, it leads you to a place where at the end of that time, they were actually abandoning our allies at the United Nations Security Council. I hope we don't get there again, but Jay, this looks an awful lot like that to me.
But you know, our Secretary Mayorkas, I'm going to go back to the situation on the border for a moment, Jordan. When we're looking at people coming into the United States, we should play this again. This is really, you want to set it up a little bit? This is really troubling. Of the thousands that have come in, over 60,000 individuals, 3% are SIVs.
Yeah, and take a listen. It doesn't say, you have to listen to a long bite. This is a hearing in Congress today, bite 52.
Of the over 60,000 individuals who've been brought into the United States, and I will give you approximate figures and I will verify them, approximately 7% have been United States citizens, approximately 6% have been lawful permanent residents, approximately 3% have been individuals who are in receipt of their special immigrant visas. The balance of that population are individuals whose applications have not yet been processed for approval, who may qualify as SIVs and have not yet applied, who would qualify as P1 or P2 refugees, who have been employed by the United States government in Afghanistan and are otherwise vulnerable Afghan nationals, such as journalists, human rights advocates, etc.
So there you go. I mean, listen, 3% are individuals who have their special immigrant visas. Only 7% were people who were U.S. citizens, 6 that were lawful. I mean, so you put all those numbers together, the vast majority are just random Afghans.
Well, you did the math just now. What was it?
Yeah, back of the napkin. 84% of these people, Jay, we don't know who they are. No idea.
Let me think about this for a moment. Yeah, how does that work for you, Colonel?
Yeah, and it becomes not only a total mess up in Afghanistan, it becomes a national security issue.
Of course. If the media was fair, which they're not, they would be pointing this out. 70,000 people come here, and most of them, we have no idea what they are and who they are. They just got on the airplane. And we still have Americans in there. Now, hopefully they're getting out. But, I mean, this just shows you the whole nonsense. So that was our day at the UN. That was America's re-engagement with the world. It's a joke. It's not a joke because it's too serious. It's a fiasco. Now, how do you handle the fiasco? You keep pushing back like we're doing at the ACLJ. You get information, you get that information out, and you keep engaging.
That's right. So today,
don't stop engaging.
Remember, at ACLJ.org, there's a brand new piece. It just went up this morning, right before we went on the air, by Secretary Pompeo on Afghanistan specifically. He says, far too many questions remain unanswered. He goes through those. And then when you just heard from our DHS secretary, you understand why. You've got to keep asking these questions and getting answers to these questions. It may be shocking. You might not like what you hear. We've got to get to the truth. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.